भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवति उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी कृष्णे स्वधामोपगते धनमज्ञानाधिभिः सह कलौ नष्ट दृशामेश पुराणार्कोऽधुनोदितः ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम Canto 5, Chapter 19. We'll be doing a few verses today. We'll begin with text number 16. We'll end with text number 19, which is written on the board. So I'll just begin reading myself the verses. Text number 16. The chapter is entitled The Island of Jambudvip. Okay. Bharate api asmin varshe sarichailaha santi. Bahovo malayo mangala prastho mainakas trikuta rishabha kutakaha kullakaha sahyo devagirir rishyamukha shri shailo venkato mahendro varidharo vindhyaha shuktiman rikshagirihi. पारियात्रो द्रोणश्चित्रकूटो गोवर्धनो रैवतकः ककुभो नीलो गोकामुखः इन्द्रकीलः कामगिरिर् इति चान्ये च शतसहस्रशः शैलास्तेषां नितम्बप्रभवा नदा नद्यश्च सन्ति असङ्ख्याताः. दट् मीन्स् इन् द ट्राक्ट् आफ् लेण्ड् नोन् एस् भारतवर्ष एस् इन् इलावृतवर्ष There are many mountains and rivers. Some of the mountains are known as Malaya, Mangalaprastha, Mainaka, Trikuta, Rishabha, Kutaka, Kollaka, Sahya, Devagiri. Anyone recognize any of these names? These are still places that are known, many of them, some of them. Jiva Goswami comments on this particular verse that although these places are all there, they're gradually becoming avyakta, antardhana. They're disappearing. Not that they're disappearing, they're being paved over or run over, as that's what we do as conditioned and demoniac living beings. So, Rishyamukha, Sri Shaila, Venkata, Mahendra, Varidhara, Vintya, Shuktiman, Rikshagiri, Pariyatra, Drona, Chitrakuta. Anyone been there? Famous place of Lord Ramchandra's pastimes? Govardhana. Acharya's commenting here say that this Govardhana refers to none other than Harirasa Variga, our own Giriraj Govardhana. Raivataka, Kakubha, Nila, Gokamukha, Indrakila, and Kamagiri. Besides these, there are many other hills with many large and small rivers flowing from their slopes. Then, there's no purport here, so we'll go to the next text. The next text then talks about some of these rivers, famous rivers. Listen carefully. Etasam apo bharatyah prajanam abhireva punantinam atmanap chopas sprishanti chandravasa tamraparani avatoda kritamala vaihayasi kaveri veni payaswini sharkaravrata tungabhadra krishnavenya bhimarathi godavari nirvindhya payoshni tapi reva surasa narmada chanmanvati sindhur andhah shonash Chanadao, Mahanadi, Veda Smritir, Rishikulya, Trisama, Kaushiki, Mandakini, Yamuna, Saraswati, Trishadvati, Gomati, Shariyu, Rothaswati, Saptavati, Sushoma, Shatadrus, Chandrabhaga, Marudrutha, Vitasta, Asikni, Vishveti, Mahanadyaha. That means two of the rivers, the Brahmaputra and the Shona, are called nadas, or main rivers. These are other great rivers that are very prominent. Chandravasa, Tamrapurni. Where's Tamrapurni? Anyone know? In the extreme south. I was just there in the winter. It's very beautiful. That river is still pure. You can still drink the water and bathe in it. And we'll see what Prabhupada says about that idea. Avatoda, Kritamala, another river in the south. Vaihayasi, Kaveri, Veni, Payaswini, Sharkaravarta, Tungabhadra, Krishnavenya, Bhimarati, Godavari. So far, all these rivers, mostly they're in the south. Nirvintya, Payoshni, Tapi. Where's Tapi? Anybody know? Gujarat. If you go to Surat, our temple in Surat is right on the bank of the Tapti. Tapti, they also call it, or Tapi River. Right on the bank of that river. When I was last there, some 30 years ago, it was a very pure and idyllic spot out in the country surrounded by greenery. I'm told that now it's an urban center, just like Vrindavan. So, things change. Okay, where were we?
Reva, Surasa, Narmada, Charmanvati, Mahanadi.
Where is Mahanadi? Orissa. I used to live there also. On the bank of the, in Katak, which used to be the capital of Orissa, on the bank of the Mahanadi River, there's an old temple there, Chandi Temple. Outside of this Chandi Temple, there is the Parapit of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a small shrine which was erected by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I used to go and visit.
Veda Smriti Rishikulya, Trisama, Kaushiki, Mandakini, Yamuna, we know Yamuna. Saraswati, Drishadvati. Drishadvati, they say, flows near Kurukshetra, but it's no more existing. Or maybe it exists, but it's no longer visible. Antardhan hoya.
So then we have Gomati. Where is Gomati? Dwarka. There may be a few Gomatis actually, but one is in Dwarka. Sariyu, this is famous river in which place? Ramchandra's place, Ayodhya.
Rodhaswati, Saptavati, Sushoma, Shatadru.
Anybody know where is Shatadru? No, we've lost this. Shatadru is nowadays known as Satluj. Any Punjabis here, you'll know. Punjab itself, the word Punjab means Panchapa, five rivers. There are five famous rivers flowing in that place. Sindhu is one of them. Shatadru is another one. Vipasha. What do we have? Naravi is not one of them. Jhelum. I forget the Sanskrit name of the Jhelum River. Anyway, five rivers. And some of them are mentioned here. Vitasta. Vitasta, I believe, is Jhelum. And Bias River, now they call it Bias. It's called Bias River because Bias Deva had an ashram nearby. But even before then, it was called Vipasha. And it was called Vipasha because Sringarishi, at one point, there was some family calamity, and he was so disturbed that he decided he was going to drown himself. And so he tied himself up very tightly with ropes and threw himself into this river. But the river, being a sacred river, decided that I don't need to be killing sages. So we want to keep these people here, because otherwise what will happen to the rest of us? So somehow she freed him from the ropes, and he was not able to be killed. He tried to kill himself unsuccessfully. The river itself untied all the ropes. Therefore the river was named Vipasha. Viparsha means untying the parsha. Parsha means ropes. Just a small stories behind this. And nowadays they call it Bias. It's another one of those five rivers in the Punjab. Punjab is actually a place we'll find tremendous description, endless descriptions of Punjab and north areas in the Vedas in particular. Lots of yajnas went on there. So, Asikni, Vishwa, these are some other rivers. The inhabitants of Bharatvarsha are purified because they always remember these rivers. Nowadays, the River Sindh, there are not very many people worshipping. River Sindh happens to be in modern-day Pakistan. But they appreciate it on an adipotic level. One Vaishnava Acharya named Vallabha Acharya, he says that we can appreciate all these holy rivers on three levels. We can appreciate on the adipotic level, that's on the physical plane. How do we appreciate water on a physical plane? Water, you can build dams with it. You can drink. You can cool your nuclear power plants with water. Water is very valuable to a person absorbed in the bodily concept of life. And a person who thinks like an animal is called adipotic. He's purely on the physical plane. He sees sense gratification as the chief thing in life. But there's also another level of existence. What is that? Adipotic? Adidevic means there are godly beings who are behind the scenes, operating everything, making sure that everything goes on. We cannot see them when our eyes are covered by the vision of sense gratification, when we do not see through Shastra Chakshu. We cannot see such subtle beings, but they are there. And on that level, every one of these rivers has a personified form. Mostly they're female. Two of them mentioned here are male. Does anybody know who are the male rivers? Brahmaputra. Putra is a male noun. And? Shona. Now here it says, two of the rivers, Brahmaputra are called nadas, or main rivers. I looked in the commentaries and didn't see anything explicit that would say main river, except maybe Mahanadi, if you interpret it as not referring to the river of Orissa. But in that case, it's not a nadi anymore, is it? It's Mahanada. So I suspect this is one of those editorial mistakes that somehow escaped. It should say male rivers. Brahmaputra and Shona are the male rivers. All others are female. Rivers generally are female. Just as a female in the course of the month has a certain period of contamination, so the rivers also have a certain period of contamination. When is that? Anybody know? During the rainy season. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, even though the river is in Ritu, during the rainy season, and full of bubbles, foam, and mud, still they're pure. Why are they pure? Let's hear from Srila Prabhupada. Purport. All these rivers are transcendental. Therefore, one can be purified by remembering them, touching them, or bathing in them. This practice is still going on. So we have to be very careful not to pollute these rivers like Yamuna and Ganga, all of them. We have to be very careful, because otherwise how can we guarantee? Nowadays you cannot even physically bathe in the Yamuna. If you do, you are risking exposure to maybe 30 to 50 times over the legal limit of acceptable pollutants, which are carcinogenic. 15 years ago, one professor in America, his name is David Haberman, he's also somewhat a devotee, he has written a book about the Yamuna and given all the statistics about the Yamuna. At that time, the contamination was 20 times over what the law allowed. So we can only assume now that it's increased, because that's what these things do in Kali Yuga. So fortunately we're hearing this information from the Acharyas, from Jiva Goswami in particular, that one can be purified just by remembering them. Anybody know this Yamunashtaka written by Srila Rupa Goswami? He says, if you just desire to bathe in the Yamuna, you become freed from so many sinful reactions. If you simply desire.
Therefore, when you bathe outside of Vrindavan, you can at least remember Yamuna and invoke her name and become purified in that way. It's a completely valid process of taking advantage of these holy rivers. But we should not force that process by continuing to, if in effect, urinate into the Yamuna and other things that we do. This is an important point. So that's the text number 17 and 18, and now we have on the board number 19. I'm just going to chant this verse myself, because it's after all not really a verse, but it is. Asminneva varshe purushair labdha janmabhihi shukla lohita krishna varnena swarabdhena karmana divya manusha naraka gatayo bahuvya atmanaha anupurvyena sarva hi eva sarvesham vidhyante yatha varna vidhanam apavargaschapi bhavati. Very interesting thing. This says, translation by Srila Prabhupada, the people who take birth in this tract of land, what tract of land are we talking about? Bharatavarsha, in particular. The people who take birth in this tract of land are divided according to the qualities of material nature, the modes of goodness, sattva-guna, passion, rajaguna, and ignorance, tamoguna. Some of them are born as exalted personalities, and some are ordinary human beings, and some are extremely abominable. For in Bharatvarsha, one takes birth exactly according to one's past karma. If one's position is ascertained by a bona fide spiritual master, and if one is properly trained to engage in the service of Lord Vishnu, according to the four social divisions, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the four spiritual divisions, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, one's life becomes perfect. Purport. For further information, one should refer to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 18, and chapter 18, texts 42 through 45. Srila Ramanujacharya writes in his book, Vedanta Sangraha. This is another mistake, I'm sorry to say. There is no such book as Vedanta Sangraha. However, there is a famous book written by Ramanujacharya called Vedartha Sangraha. I'm sure that that's the book that Srila Prabhupada is referring to, most likely another editorial error. So he writes, and Prabhupada quotes this passage in full because it's very germane. Evam vidha parabhakti surupa jnana vishesha syotpadakaha purvokta haraya upachiyamana jnana purvaka karmanu krihita bhakti yoga eva yathoktam bhagavata parashavena varnashana meti nikhila jagaruddharanaya avanitale avatiranam parabrahmabhuta purushottamah swayameta ruktavan svakarma niratah siddhim yatha vindidetta chvino yatha pravittir bhutanam yena sarvamidam tatam svakarmanatam abhyarchya siddhim vindati manavah yati. So the verses that Srila Prabhupada has mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, they're actually being cited here by Ramanujacharya in his Vedarta Sangraha. Excuse me. They are also cited by the Acharya that Srila Prabhupada has clearly based his purport on. This purport follows, rather than any of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas, it follows the commentary given by Srila Viraraghava Acharya, who's coming in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. It's a little bit unusual that Srila Prabhupada would step aside from his own tradition and listen to what someone else has to say in preference to what the others say. Actually, it just elaborates on what the others have said. That's probably why he did this. But at any rate, he's quoting here Ramanujacharya's Vedarta Sangraha,
Then Prabhupada adds his own comment here. He says, quoting from the Vishnu Purana 389, the great, well, actually it says 389. This is the third error we found in one day. It's an austerity to be an editor because you find flaws with the entire world. You can't hear anything without finding flaws. Quoting from Vishnu Purana 3.8.9, the great sage Parashar Muni has recommended, this is a famous verse, let's turn off our cell phones, please, everyone, if you've got a cell phone, like me. So, quoting from Vishnu Purana, the great sage Parashar Muni has recommended, Varnashrama Charavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate Pantha Nanyat Tattoshakaranam. That means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, is worshipped by the proper execution of prescribed duties in the system of Varna and Ashrama. There is no other way to satisfy the Lord. In the land of Bharatavarsha, the institution of Varnashram Dharma may be easily adopted. At the present moment, a certain demoniac sections of the population of Bharatavarsha are disregarding the system of Varnashram Dharma because there is no institution to teach people how to become Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, or Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis. These demons want a classless society. Sri Sri Guru Gauranga ki jai, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram ki jai, Sri Sri Lalita Vishakha Sahataradha Shyama Sundara ki jai. This is resulting in chaotic conditions. In the name of secular government, unqualified people are taking the supreme governmental posts. No one is being trained to act according to the principles of Varna Ashram Dharma, and thus people are becoming increasingly degraded and are heading in the direction of animal life. The real aim of life is liberation. But, unfortunately, the opportunity for liberation is being denied to people in general. And therefore, their human lives are being spoiled. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, is being propagated all over the world to reestablish the Varnashram Dharma system and thus save human society from gliding down to hellish life. Om Gnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Milita Miena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pungam Lunghayate Girim Yat Kripatam Aham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam. We've heard some very interesting comments in the last several days regarding this passage from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm thinking in particular at this moment as Kratu Prabhu gave a nice summary. He read the chapter summary given by Srila Prabhupada here for the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which he also brought to our attention a very salient remark that Srila Prabhupada makes in that chapter summary. Srila Prabhupada writes in his second paragraph, It's quite relevant to these verses that we've read today. In the planet known as Bharatavarsha, there are many rivers and mountains as there are in other tracts of land. Yet, Bharatavarsha has special significance because in this tract of land there exists the Vedic principle of Varnashram Dharma, which divides society into four Varnas and four Ashramas. Furthermore, Narada Muni's opinion is that even if there is some temporary disturbance in the execution of the Varnashram Dharma principles, they can be revived at any moment. And Srila Prabhupada takes this a step further in today's purport with his concluding sentence in that purport, in which he writes, "The Krishna consciousness movement is being propagated all over the world to reestablish the Varnashram Dharma system and thus save society from gliding down to hellish life." That's a very strong statement, and I've already pointed out it's also very significant, it would seem, to consider that Srila Prabhupada is listening to someone from outside of our sampradaya in order to make this emphatic point. The emphasis on Varnashram Dharma is coming from Srila Prabhupada. The other Gaudiya Vaishnava commentators on text 19 in particular, they have not so strongly emphasized it, if they've mentioned it at all. I don't remember the texts in my mind offhand. But it's pretty generic, their comments. But Viraragava Acharya is very explicit. He goes into more detail. Srila Prabhupada generally, when he identifies Varnashram Dharma so as not to allow anyone to make any mistake about what he means, he qualifies. It is the system of four ashramas and four varnas. In fact, the system of Varnashram Dharma is much broader than just those eight divisions of society, although those are indispensable divisions. The substrate of that system is that one has a consciousness of Shreyas. In the end of chapter 16 in Bhagavad Gita, those who know, anybody know, text 23, chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita? Or, I mean, the whole end of the chapter is very good, so I'll just read it quickly. He talks about this. He says, there are three gates leading to hell. We all know what those are. Three gates leading to hell are lust, anger, greed. And a person should be very careful to avoid these. How does he avoid them? According to chapter 16 of Bhagavad Gita. Tasmat shastram pramanam te karya karya vijanataha. You should discriminate what is to be done and what is not to be done on the basis of what the Shastra enjoins. The word enjoins is very significant here, because we have also in this verse here, the word is used, vidhyante. They are enjoined, that is to say, the human beings. They are enjoined to follow along with this system according to their modes. If we want to be a human being, then we have to follow what the Shastra says. He says, Krishna says again, etar vimukta kaunteya tamo dwara istribhir naraha achariti atmana shreyas. Achariti atmana shreyas. One should constantly act in such a way as to elevate the self. Human form of life is distinguished by this effort only. Shreyas. There are two things that we hear about in the Shrutis. One is called Shreyas, and the other one is called Preyas. Preyas means that which is immediately appealing. Just like children, they want to play all day long. If you left it up to them, they would only eat ice cream, nothing else. This is called Preyas. And we are also like this to some degree. But Shreyas means that you have to accept some voluntary austerity. Normally it entails some voluntary austerity with the ultimate purpose of elevation, the understanding being that there are higher things to be gained in the human form of life. This is the defining characteristic of an actual human being. A human being is not defined only in terms of having two arms, two legs, two eyes, etc. Dharma is what defines a human being. So Krishna says you should act like this. And yati param gatim, you will get the supreme destination if you do that. In today's verse also, text number 19, it's stated here that
Yathavarna vidhanam apavarkas chapi bhavati. When you are a human being in Bharatavarsha and you follow according to this system of dharma, then what do you get? Apavargas shabhavati. Apavarga means, who knows? Apavarga means liberation. Now, there are different kinds of liberation, we know that. There are at least five different kinds of liberation. Just like the pujari, he's liberated. As long as he is remaining in the service of the deity, that's called samipya mukti. He's in personal proximity with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a liberated state. Those who live on the same planet as the Lord, that's called salokya mukti. Those who are living fortunate enough to live in the holy dham of Vrindavana, you can say it's a salokya mukti of some sort. At least it's training for that position. So similarly, you can get a form similar to the Lord, you can get opulences similar to the Lord. You can function so much in attunement to the Lord's desire that you become the senses of the Lord. This is the Vaishnava interpretation of Sayujya Mukti. Otherwise, the impersonalist or the Jnani interpretation of Sayujya Mukti is that you merge into the Lord. Either way, it's a merging of sorts. So this is Paramgatim. So Apavarga, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments elsewhere, Apavarga actually has different meanings according to the adhikar of the individual. If the person is a karmi, then Apavarga means he goes beyond this, he gets liberation, any kind of liberation. He goes beyond the realm of karma if he has really perfected his fruit of activity. Jnani, for the jnani to gain knowledge. Knowledge means awareness, realization. That's apavarga. But for the devotees, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, for them, apavarga means the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is apavarga. And this verse says, according to commentators, apavargascha mokshascha. Or one can get liberation. Now, how do you get liberation? Veeraraghavacharya has further explained, if you follow very strictly according to your varnashram duties and do not deviate, anatikramya, if you do not deviate from those duties, then you get liberation. Otherwise, many acharyas have quoted other verses from other places to show that, in effect, what's described in chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita, Urvam gachadi sattvastha. If you're solidly situated in sattva guna and you very strictly follow everything perfectly, but do not free yourself of material desire, then you go to the heavenly realms. It's described in the third canto in this way. Adyantikena sattvena divam deva prapedire. You will take birth as a deva when you have atyantikena sattvena, when you have too much sattva guna, too much of a good thing. Sattva guna is generally a good thing for spiritual advancement. But sattva guna without coming to this trigunya stage that Krishna encourages in Bhagavad Gita, that will end you up in Svarga Loka as a deva. And once you get into the deva realm, it's very hard to get out. It's like a vortex. It's a little bit like in this world, we have Prince Charles in the United Kingdom. Prince Charles is a very nice gentleman, very intelligent, very favorable to Krishna consciousness, in fact. He knows about ISKCON. He likes ISKCON. But he cannot get out of that birth. The paradigm is such that you cannot escape. They will kill you. There's a lot of conspiracy theories surrounding Princess Diana. it's an entanglement. This is the point. So that atyantikena sattvena, by that kind of too much sattva guna without jnana or without devotional service, then you become a devata. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted this verse. Veeraraghavacharya has quoted this verse in his own commentary. So he says, anatikramya yathavarnam vidhanam apavargo mokshascha bhavati.
You get moksha only if you perfectly follow these things, but also you need something more than that. You need something more than that. So, dharmasya apavarga, what is that? Dharmasya hyapavargasya narthayo arthayopakalpate, correct? This verse, Vishwanath Chakravarti actually quotes today's verse in his commentary on this first canto verse. First canto, chapter 2, text number 9, famous verse. That is to say that one should cultivate dharma, but those who are cultivating dharma should never use its fruits to remain in material existence. That's the essence of it. Dharma, the artha is produced of dharma, and the kama is fulfilled through artha. It's a natural sequence. Mahabharata explains this, as quoted in commentaries on that verse. When you perform dharma, you get artha. You get facility, you get assets, you get facilitated. And then you can fulfill your desires, but that is not the end of it. This is the point. Nistrai gunyo bhava, Krishna tells Arjuna. You have to come beyond these three modes. That only happens through jnana. So that's the good part of sattva guna. Sattvat sanjayate jnanam. In the 11th canto, Krishna is teaching this. Through sattva guna, we get jnana. That is the real point. This is also mentioned at the end of chapter, well, in the early chapters of the first canto. Same principle is there. Stressing the importance of sattva guna. It's a very important thing. Actually, only the Vedic tradition has any understanding of these three modes of material nature. Scientific understanding of Sankhya. And the Sankhya principles underlie all the injunctions that are found in Shastra. The injunctions what to do and what not to do. The Shastra Pramanam that Krishna mentions at the end of chapter 16. If we want to purify our existence, which is one of the first qualities that Krishna mentions as being a divine quality, again, in chapter 16. Anybody know what the phrase is? Purification of your existence? How do you say it in Sanskrit? Abhayam sattva samshuddhir jnana yoga vyavastitihi. This is the idea. This sattva guna is good because it enables you to become free from fear. It enables you to purify your material existence. That means you purify your mundane body through contact with these holy rivers, holy mountains like Giriraj. The body is purified. I know a lady, she's no more in this world, but she had some sort of disease. I don't know exactly what it was, but she had to have her stomach removed. She couldn't eat anything. And she had her stomach removed, and then the doctor said, you know, you're in such bad shape, you're probably going to die. So she came to Vrindavan. And she was very enthusiastically, when she was in Vrindavan, she became so enlivened by this environment that she just became excited to perform more and more devotional service and more devotional activities. Even she couldn't eat, but she was very enthusiastically performing Giriraj Govardhan Parikrama. Giriraj Adhari Ki Jaya. And she became so much better that she practically forgot all about her illness, but in fact she didn't have a stomach. And eventually it caught up with her, and eventually she did leave her body. But the point is that contact with these pure entities, these holy rivers that Prabhupada is mentioning, holy mountains, and especially here in Vrindavan Dham, of all the places, this is the best. Even the king of the Tirthas is considered to be whom? Prayagraj. But Prayagraj is coming here to become to purify himself. You see? So, purification of our existence means when we follow the Shastra Vidhis, Shastra Vidhana, the system in the Shastra. I mentioned Varnashram is a system. It's a comprehensive system. It goes beyond the eight divisions that we've mentioned. It is a system that governs your every waking moment with the Vidhis of Shastra. Therefore, it's called Vidhana. The word Vidhana means based on vidhi. Vidhi means a command. Vedanta philosophy is called Uttara Mimamsa.
the later Mimamsa, whereas Karmakanda philosophy is called Purva Mimamsa. But both of them are Mimamsa. And in the Mimamsa system, it is understood that ultimately the Vedas have nothing but injunctions. Do this and do not do that. Just like when you deal with small children, there's no question of reasoning. There's just command. You have to eat now. And whatever it takes to get them to do that thing, that is the subject of the Vedas. This is according to Purva Mimamsa, at least. We have a little different understanding. But the idea is that this is all part of purification of our existence, and that is the value of sattva-guna. Because through sattva-guna, you can become convinced of the necessity, the vital necessity of bhakti yoga. Not only that, but there's another thing. The system of varnashram purifies one's existence, and it purifies one's intellect as well as one's body. Therefore, he says, you can purify your body by touching the yamuna. You can purify your mind by remembering the yamuna. You can purify your tongue by chanting the name yamuna. You see? So we purify our intellect also. The samskar should change. This is the point. Over time, the impressions within the mind that impel us to act in certain ways instead of other ways, those are called samskara. Impression. It's like when you print a book. Pratama samskarana. Dvitiya samskarana. Means imprint. The impressions that are formed in one's mind are of a certain sort when they are the result of activities that are enjoined in Shastra. They are of another sort altogether when they are the result of activities that are without reference to Shastra or in disobedient to the Shastra. Those impressions are different. Those are called kusamskar. They end one up in a lower birth. So urtham gacchanti sattvastha. Someone in sattva-guna will go up. Madhye tishtanti rajasaha. Somebody in rajoguna will take birth again as a human being instead of a demigod. What about the person who is acting in tamoguna? He doesn't know any of this stuff. He's just bumbling through life. As the Nobel laureate poet T.S. Eliot wrote, from wrong to wrong, the exasperated spirit proceeds. This is life in tamoguna. Cannot get anything off the ground. So what happens to them? Who knows? Adhoga chanti tamasa. Those who are in tamoguna, they go down. And what kind of body do you take when you're in tamoguna? Tiryagnyoni. Tiryagnyoni means the animal birth. Or you go to naraka. In the commentaries, these three are particularly mentioned. Actually, it's very poetic here. In the verse, the words are used. Well, he mentions Divya Manasha Naraka Gataya. You have three goals, possibly. You have a Divya Gati, you have a Manasha Gati, and you have a Naraka Gati. These are the results of performing activity at Sattva-guna, Rajaguna, and Tamaguna, respectively. So human life is actually meant and characterized by the effort to come to the level of Sattva-guna. The perfection of Sattva-guna is that we get liberation, not only in personal liberation or in liberation in terms of our knowledge, but liberation in devotional service. Because we know, if one is engaged in pure devotional service, then liberation and what to speak of dharma, artha, and kama, they're all ready to render service unto the devotee, pure devotee. This is the point. So there's much, much more that can be said about this. There are many, many, many important points here. But it's getting late, so I think I'm going to stop here. Just a few of the salient things that Srila Prabhupada has said. First of all, after mentioning the verses from Bhagavad Gita that Ramanujacharya specifically quotes in his Vedarta Sangraha, shall we read them? Do you want to hear? what those verses are? Because I don't think we read the translations. He mentions first chapter 14, text number 18, that I've just paraphrased. Then we've also got chapter 18, there are a few verses. Shamodamastabashocham kshantirajamalevacha, describing the Brahminical qualities. Then the verses describing the Kshatriya qualities, etc. These things are described. Then he goes on after that. He says, Svakarnamana tam abhyarcha siddhim vindanti manava yata pravittir bhutanam yena sarvam idam tatam. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. We never want to perform someone else's work. Everything depends on swadhikar, personal prerogative. You have to do only what you're qualified to do and not attempt anything higher than what you can do. And you also have to do as much as you can do without settling with anything less than what you can do. It has to be right on the money. You have to do exactly what you're able to do. Maximum capacity, you have to work. That is called guna. And to settle with anything other than that is called dosha, flaw. So he says, sve sve karmanya bhirataha samsiddhim labhate naraha. Samsiddhi. Samsiddhi means this moksha. A person can attain liberation by doing his own work in this way. So karma nirata siddhim yatha vindita tachrinu. Krishna's saying, if you want to know about this, hear from me how it can be done. This is in chapter 18 of Bhagavad Gita. So Prabhupada says, a certain section of the society now, who are demons, they are disregarding the system of Varnashram Dharma. They're disregarding. What does it mean to disregard something? It means, yes, it's there, but we're not going to pay attention to it. That is demoniac, according to this purport. And the attachment to this concept of a classless society, this is also something that Prabhupada is here characterized as demoniac. Variety is the mother of enjoyment. And it is also the nature of this creation of the Lord. It's full of variety. And these things are discussed in various places in Srila Prabhupada's books. So the result of this, unfortunately, is that people are becoming Varna Sankara, and therefore they're becoming contaminated. And therefore the whole world is becoming contaminated. We see increasingly a pollution of every sort. We see financial disaster, political disaster, social disaster, spiritual disaster, economic disaster, emotional disaster. How many do you watch? On all levels, the decadence that we see in today's world is would seem to be unprecedented. It comes because people do not want to act as human beings. They don't want to obey vidhis. So Srila Prabhupada's approach to Krishna consciousness and bhakti in general was very vidhi-oriented. He's known for this. Others, especially here in Vrindavan, they talk about bhava and other pleasing things. Vidhi sometimes is not so easy thing. It's shreyas. It's of that nature. So we should be honest about what is our adhikar and follow in accordance with that. And that's the path of progress. Does anyone have any questions or any comments? Shubha Krishna. Did I say that? Yeah. Vidhi is always intended to elevate us. I mentioned this before. Every injunction in the Shastra has as its ultimate purpose bringing us up. Up means coming out of illusion. Coming into sattva guna, and then if there, when your adhikar changes, which it does over time, then getting out of sattva guna also, and going into liberation, and beyond liberation into pure bhakti. This is the elevation, this is the shreyas that vidhi always entails. There's never any rules and regulations that do not have this shreyas behind them. This is the point. And usually it's carried out in terms of Sankhya categories, a very detailed understanding of the principles of material nature and how they're working. If we don't understand how material nature is working, then we cannot possibly extricate ourselves from it. It's a very, very important prerequisite. Like when you go to college, you have certain courses you cannot enroll unless you've taken the prerequisite course. You see? So liberation is like that. Liberation in knowledge is like that. Real bhakti, Krishna says in chapter 18, is predicated on this understanding. That's the point. Is that clear? This is all called Sambandha Gyan. The 9 cantos leading up to the 10th canto deal with Sambandha Gyan because it's that necessary. So much.
Arjuna was told to become Vishtra Gurnaya. He still continued to be Kshatriya and fighting. Was he cultivating goodness or just being engaged in that service he was Vishtra Gurnaya?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. Can you repeat? Yes, very good point. There are many ways to understand Bhagavad Gita, but all of them entail the understanding that at the end of the day, Arjuna is going to fight. We talk about Sarva Dharman Parityajya, but the entire Bhagavad Gita is meant to make him fight, which is his dharma. So how did he give it up? Therefore, Viraghavacharya has said in his commentary to this verse, today's verse, Yatha Varnam Anushtanam Anatikramya Kartam. This is the idea. You have to act according to your enjoined vidhi. You have to follow your own work as is enjoined in Shastra. That is always the path. Now, it is not necessarily so that to become a pure devotee, nistraigunya devotee, that you have to give up these things. That's impossible. Because there's always a social system. Always. As long as we're dealing with anyone else, we have a social system. Whether we can articulate that system or not, that's another matter. Whether that system is authorized or not, that's also another matter. But there is always a social system. This is it's axiomatic, you see? Therefore, the injunction is you have to follow it according to the varnas. If we study very carefully the commentaries in chapter 18, that particular section, we'll find that this is the conclusion. At the end of the day, Arjuna has to fight, even though he's nistraigunya. You see? Is that okay? Anything else? Let's back. It's Shashmawala.
Hare Krishna,
Prabhuji, just wanted to understand, in the modern times, the varnashram dharma basically has led to, casteism. And so how do we understand that? You know, we talk about in the Shastra that varnashram dharma really is the way we should follow, but it's not outside people who don't follow it. You know, it's really led in the negative way. So
yeah. This is another very, very, very important point. The reason it's not just because they're demons that people are rejecting the caste system or the varnashram system. Actually, there is serious misuse of this system for over many centuries. Endemic, prolonged, even you can say terminal misuse of the system. So that has to be recognized. What conclusion does it bring us to? The conclusion is that you cannot perform your prescribed duty properly unless you are Krishna conscious. Unless the motive is solely to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and to attain his lotus feet, that we've already defined as apavarga, then you are going to misuse your position, your social position, your financial position, your emotional position, your whatever your position is. Whatever assets you have, you're going to misuse them until the heart is pure. Therefore, we stressed so much, when we follow the Shastra Vidhis, then we purify our existence. When our existence is purified, we can cultivate Gyan. Situated in Gyan, we can peacefully execute devotional service.
So we have to follow Varnashram in order to come to the stage of Bhakti Yoga. But we cannot perfectly follow Varnashram without Bhakti Yoga. This is the point. Shrama eva hi kevalam. If we try to do that, then we end up, as we've mentioned earlier, either in Svargaloka or, if we're a little more Rajasic, in this world. We don't go all the way up. We go part of the way and we remain within the realm of karma. So this is the important point that a person has to understand. Bilva Mangala Thakur has said very nicely in one verse. He says, Sahitya Komaladhye Vayameva Yavat Karkesha, what is it? Anyway, I don't remember. But he says that one can have sensitive thought in the realm of literature, and one can have stern thought in the realm of philosophy, and Nirantaradhi, one can have ceaseless thought and attention to one's duties in this world, only so long as one has a complete thought of Krishna. As long as our minds are fixed on Krishna, then we can do any other thing appropriately. If our minds are not fixed on Krishna, or if our purpose is ultimately not something other than Krishna, if our purpose is something other than Krishna, then if we're not going to take full advantage, we're going to abuse whatever we've been given, including Varnashram. This is the point. Therefore, only the devotees can actually do this thing. We cannot learn from anyone else. Is that okay? Anything? Other questions? Comments? Okay, so then we'll end here. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.